Hello, plantpreneurs, and welcome to Series 4 of the Plant-Based Business Podcast brought to you by us here at Vivolution. I'm Eric Amundsen, your co-host, and welcome to one of our mini episodes where we will hear from a startup success story. Tune in each week to hear from a founder who has found funding utilizing the Vivolution investment marketplace. Hey, Eric here. Thanks for listening. A quick word from our sponsor, Plant Belly. There are so many vegan grocery products out there nowadays, and it's amazing. But with all these options comes a lot of trial and error to find the best of the best. It happens to all of us. You buy something that ends up being a little disappointing. But what if you could have all the best vegan products put together in one place and shop them easily on your phone or from home? That's where plantbelly.com comes in. It's a new online vegan grocery store that delivers highly curated plant-based foods right to your door. Plant Belly has, hands down, the best selection of outstanding plant-based foods I've ever seen. I especially love that you can shop by ethos to find brands owned by women or BIPOC makers. I, for example, always search the latest seafood or deli products. It's a great selection. PlantBelly.com is a team of foodies, vegans, and passionate supporters of small batch makers, and they've handpicked only the tastiest plant-based eats to feature on PlantBelly.com. You can use code VIVOLUTION to get 20% off your first order at plantbelly.com. That's VEVOLUTION to get 20% off your first order when you visit plantbelly.com. Now back to the show. I'm your host, Eric Amundsen, and today I'm joined by Jack Reed, co-founder and CEO of Unicorn Biotechnologies. Unicorn Bio develops the next generation of biomanufacturing systems to power the cell-based revolution. Jack, how's it going today?
We're doing all right today. The sun is shining and the sky is blue. I can't complain. Thanks for having me on, man.
Where are you calling from?
Yeah, so I'm calling in from Cambridge in the UK today.
From what I understand, I think previous conversations, you come from a background of a few different places around the world. You've been around at different universities and different countries. What is your professional background? And kind of how did you get to this point of where you're at now? Can you give us a little bit of a background of who you are?
Yeah, so I'll skip my life story. So I'm from the US originally. Lived all over the country. Went to university and did a degree in chemistry and philosophy. Always been fascinated by the sciences and the intersection with the humanities. How can we use science to do really cool things like in human health and sustainability? And how does the way we think about it help us do those things faster? So I worked for a little while in the US, came over to Europe to teach in Poland at a university on a Fulbright fellowship. And then, came over here to Cambridge in the UK to finish my graduate work. And I loved what I was doing, but realized actually what got me out of bed and what I wanted to spend my career doing was more in the realm of translational science, taking like cutting edge innovations from the lab and the workshop and bringing it to market, one foot in the commercial space, one foot in the technical space. It's my sweet spot.
What is your business and what problem are you solving?
Yeah, so Unicorn Biotechnologies is a B2B developer and provider of biomanufacturing systems and technologies for the cultivated meat ecosystem. So to put that in plain English, we'll talk a little bit about cultivated meat, what a biomanufacturing system is, and why someone like us exists. So cultivated or cell-based meat uses biotechnology to grow real meat, so muscle and fat from animal cells, not live animals. It's one of three really promising emerging alternative protein technologies alongside precision fermentation and plant-based meats. Essentially the process works. We can think about it in like a four-step process where you take a cell from an animal, say a cow or a salmon or a chicken. You grow a lot of those cells. You turn those cells into fat, muscle, etc. And then you put the cells together to make a food product. that while there are a lot of challenges facing the field and with this process, one of the really big challenges happens in that second step when we're trying to grow a lot of cells. The way you grow cells outside of living organism today is in a machine called a bioreactor. Most bioreactors look like big stainless steel tanks, like what you'd brew beer in. You need one of these systems in order to produce a large quantity of cells to make a food product. But the trouble is, most bioreactors aren't fit for purpose for cultivated meat manufacturing. These technologies were developed to either to produce, small simple cells like bacteria or yeast, or for the pharmaceutical ecosystem. They weren't really ever developed to grow the animal fat and muscle cells that we're trying to make in this ecosystem, and they certainly weren't developed for food grade production. So that's really where we're jumping in. Our aim is to develop fit for purpose bioreactors from the ground up that are able to affordably and rapidly scale the cultivated meat products and the ecosystem at large. Ultimately, we're aiming to overcome two really big challenges that's going to stop cultivated meat from scaling to mass markets: an infrastructure build out and reaching economic scale, so making products that are cost competitive with the meats that we can find in the supermarket today. That was a lot of information to throw at you, so I'll stop there.
Let's get a little elementary, and I think it's worth going through a few steps. For those listeners who are kind of new to the subject and still don't understand the subject very well, why is it that cultivated meat is so important for the planet, and why is it that that's going to be so much more scalable than maybe what we currently have?
Yeah, no, great question, Eric. So if we take a step back, the whole goal of alternative proteins is to feed a growing population in a way that's more sustainable, secure, and humane. And to do that, though, we really need to look at three factors. The first is, can we make a protein source that has the same nutritional content as what we're making today from animal sources? Then we need to make it economically. We can't be buying alternative protein burgers or products that are in a supermarket for $100 a pop. And the last pillar is, does it taste good? Does it taste like meat, better than meat, or good in a completely different way? These are all really big open questions right now that are being investigated by the firms, individuals, and agencies working in the space. Cultivated meat, we think, and the ecosystem thinks, is potentially, a really good opportunity to win on that taste element, that taste and texture. If you're trying to make a meat product from, real fat and muscle cells from an animal, the thesis is you'll be able to replicate a lot of the same taste and textures and structures that you find in animal meat.
The early, feedback, what's amazing is that only a few years ago, we didn't have these products. Now they are on plates. They're being served to people. People are eating these products in places like Singapore. And of course, even in the US and some of the testing facilities, from what we've heard, people are genuine, pretty much indistinguishable from animal-based meat, which is pretty amazing. So we're starting to make this progress. Why is biomanufacturing so important to help scale cellular agriculture? It seems as though maybe the biggest issue is that, which I think you briefly explained, was that the current solutions we have are not specific to the cell ag industry. Can you explain, why it's so important what you all do as an adjacent or next to solution to cell ag?
Yeah, sure, man. So I'll answer your question in two parts. So we'll talk broadly about maybe bioreactors, biomanufacturing, how it plays into the ecosystem, and then why we're so excited to work on what we're doing. So a metaphor that's often made compares biology to software. And so if we run with this metaphor, the cells, so this could be like the fat and muscle cells from, let's say, a cow, that would be the software. For computers, you know, you have a piece of hardware, the computer that the software runs on. For biology, the hardware that's able to run the cells and make a product is actually the biomanufacturing equipment. You know, these are, you can do small scale prototypes of, you know, a cultivated meat product in a lab. But if you're ever looking to scale these things to mass markets to produce tons and ultimately kilotons, you need to be moving into biomanufacturing systems. So that it's the hardware that enables the software of biology for manufacturing. And so, yeah, the second point is exactly like you said, existing solutions aren't fit for purpose for the cultivated meat ecosystem. Either the bioreactors that are on the market were developed for a different industry, like the biopharmaceutical manufacturing, which has very different technical and regulatory landscapes, or they were developed for a completely different purpose, like fermenting small bacteria or yeast, which are very different types of cells than the larger, more fragile fat and muscle cells being used in a cultivated meat ecosystem.
You and your team have sort of figured out that this was an important solution. How did you kind of get started with this? How did you start the company? Who is the team? Who are the co-founders? You know, bring us through sort of step one, two, three, if you will, of those first milestones of creating, you know, Unicorn Bio.
Like I mentioned earlier, I personally made the decision to dive headfirst into entrepreneurship a few years ago. And for me, the next port of call was joining a startup accelerator in London called Entrepreneur First. Entrepreneur First, which I'll shorten to EF because I'm going to say its name a lot, it's a really great accelerator where they bring together, you know, hopefully smart, talented people who are pre-team, pre-idea, but want to start the journey of forming a company. So that really appealed to me. And it's ultimately where I met my co-founder, Adam. So Adam has a PhD in cell biology and spent the last 15 years working between large industry, academia, and biotech startups between stem cell biology, device design, and manufacturing projects. You know, essentially, he's been working between the biology and the engineering for the better part of two decades. You know, Adam, very similar story to me, really loves the science, love what he does, but found that he worked best and wanted to thrive in a startup environment where you're in a smaller team working on cutting edge progress to bring something to market really quickly. Yeah, so both of us met on Entrepreneur First. We had a pretty strong shared resonance about the tech, how cool it was, about how we could apply it to a new ecosystem to drive a sustainability impact. And yeah, we also just got on really well as human beings. We were really thrilled that we were able to bring on our first two team members back in 2021, a fantastic engineer named Tom and another biologist named Adam, which does make email chains confusing sometimes. Yeah, and then from there, we developed a functional prototype of our system to essentially demonstrate what we were building and where we needed to go. And on the back of that, went out to raise our seed round of financing. We kicked that off in fall of 2021 last year and are in the process of wrapping that up right now here in early 2022.
But having that prototype, that's huge. That's a big milestone, obviously, to be able to prove to potential partners and investors that you have something that you can start to grow and scale and obviously take the company forward. This is a very technical subject even for me. I was reading a little bit about Unicorn Bio. I don't know if the prototype has application for this, but you know, I read a little bit about there being a problem with the centralized production model that has sort of dominated manufacturing over the last few decades. Can you talk about that and explain, you know, why maybe that's an issue and how you're addressing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the genesis of this is really a question about how should we make our food and our supply chains in the future? If we look at the last 50 to 75 years of food manufacturing, like in the US or Western Europe, what we've seen is increasingly central or large food production systems. You know, imagine, you know, large factory farming facilities, or, you know, farms that span hundreds of thousands of acres, all producing the same monoculture crop. You know, this has been really good for making a lot of meat and biomass quickly, but I think it's pretty uncontroversial to say that this has had a lot of negative knock-on effects.
Yes.
You know, yeah, whether we're talking about ecological damage, you know, decreasing food and nutritional diversity in the population, or, you know, just generally not being a sustainable way to produce our agricultural products. And so something we're really interested in, you know, with the technology we're developing, and more broadly alternative protein, is how can we rewrite the narrative here? How can we, as an alt protein ecosystem, develop technologies that will actually support a different type of food manufacturing, one that still has large facilities, but that supports a wider spread, more diversified network of production centers? Essentially, how can we make making alternative proteins local, much like how craft beer has been made local? This is an open question for us in the field, but it's one I'm really excited about.
That is really interesting. I think that maybe some critics' concerns about, you know, cultivated meat has been who will be, that it typically would be, or even alternative protein in general, that it'd be big companies sort of buying up these companies, and that things would still be pretty centralized. So this is pretty interesting to hear. And I really appreciate, I'm in Denver, Colorado, so I really appreciate the local brewery analogy that just paints a picture in my head that I can really understand, where, you know, there's so much availability here and in many other, you know, urban centers, not only in America, but I'm sure around the world with that analogy. How feasible is that? Do you feel like that you are cutting edge with that approach? Do you feel like that there will be other biomanufacturing companies that will also make that easier? Competition is a good thing, that it makes it easier and more cutting edge over time for everyone. I appreciate the analogy for sure.
Hey, brilliant. Hey, it's been a while since I've been out to Denver. You got to show me the craft brewing scene there. So, I mean, the exciting thing about what we're doing is that we are just at the beginning of really a revolution in biomanufacturing and bioproduction. You know, human beings have been using biologies like yeast to produce products like beer, just to use the analogy a bit more, you know, for the better part of, you know, the last 10,000 years. But where we are today, you know, we're just at the beginning of figuring out how we can use biology to produce a whole range of products. Cultivated meat, obviously, alternative proteins, and even more broadly, you know, replacement materials for oil-derived polymers, or, yeah, new materials, new medicines, and new ways to build the world. Like biomanufacturing, that's at the center of all of this. For food in particular, you know, we are just scratching the surface with the work we're doing today. Today, we are just at the beginning of a revolution in biomanufacturing. So biology is revolutionizing how we build the world around us, from, you know, materials and medicines all the way to proteins, the food we eat, and cultivated meat. You know, we, in the next few decades across the board, we are going to see a complete restructuring in how a lot of the products we know and love today get produced, and what those supply chains, what those manufacturing centers actually look like. In the food and alternative protein space, we are just scratching the surface. You know, we and other firms and teams in the space are doing a lot of good work here, but ultimately there is a long road ahead of us. And, you know, it's one that I'm excited to be on. It gets me out of bed every morning, even though I know biomanufacturing is kind of a nerdy interest, but hey, we're a bunch of nerds. We love doing this stuff.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And what's interesting is that, you know, with this audience, I think they're probably pretty familiar with a lot of the cell ag companies that primarily in food that exist. There's about 100 of them now, which is pretty insane. That's a very small amount of companies, and there's still a long ways to go. And there's a ton of support that you need to provide. I just realized the other day that there were so many other applications, like, and I don't know if the biomanufacturing you do will be specific to this example, but I didn't even realize that things like vanilla production, right? Producing the ingredient vanilla is extremely harmful, extremely kind of monocrop sort of esque, and that cell ag and maybe biomanufacturing could completely revolutionize that and make it a more sustainable ingredient to produce, which of course vanilla is in like probably every third thing that you have in your cupboard, right? So the applications are far beyond just a burger or a food product, right? It is materials, it can be ingredients. There's a lot of other applications. So that's also really exciting. Is there anything that you wish you knew before becoming an entrepreneur or starting, you know, your journey with Unicorn Bio? I would just love to hear some, you know, broadly, just a few tips that maybe you have for other entrepreneurs.
Eric, I'm absolutely boring. I just recycle the same thing over and over again. And I'm going to say people. That's the most important thing. So prior to co-founding a company, you know, a few years ago, someone who I can't remember told me that like your co-founder is akin to a spouse or a third party if you're in a relationship. And I didn't realize how true that was at the time. Yeah, like it really, Adam, who's my co-founder, you know, he is an absolutely fantastic human being. You know, he's a great scientist. I've really loved being on a journey with him since day one. And ultimately, that was the cornerstone that allowed us to go out and bring some other awesome people onto our team and to start having some of the successes we've had to date, you know. And more broadly than that, I wish that someone had told me everything we're doing in this field, you know, in the alternative protein space and as sort of a deep tech or scientific entrepreneur is about people. At the end of the day, we're here to try and make the world a better place than where we left it. You know, it's a long path ahead of us. There's a lot of challenges for us and the ecosystem more broadly to overcome, but this is all a collective journey that we're on together. And one, you know, one that really does get me and everyone who we're working with out of bed in the morning.
Love it. Well, so happy that you're a part of the Vevolution community. Jack, it was great to speak to you about Unicorn Biotechnologies. And thank you so much for being on the Plant-Based Business Podcast. Talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Cheers, Eric.
Hello, Eric here, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Business Podcast brought to you by us here at Vevolution. We're building the world's leading plant-based and cell ag community and marketplace. Head on over to www.vevolution.com to join our marketplace of investors and startups building solutions for a brighter future. In 2021, more than 25 startups secured partial or full round funding on Vevolution. And if you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a positive review. And please consider sharing it on your preferred social media channels. It really helps more people discover the positive stories we're sharing from around the world. Please give us a shout and tag us when you tell others about the podcast. You can find us on all social media channels at Vevolution. And you can email us at hello@vevolution.com if you want to reach out. We love hearing from our listeners. As always, thank you to Bridie Allison Child, who edits the podcast, and all of our guests and you, our listeners, for supporting the show. See you next time.